Hey, it's Hot and Cold Saturday morning. Good morning. I'm Tom. You knew that. You're here. We're here. It's all good. It's springtime. It's springtime in Maine, so I guess it's okay. It was 18 degrees leaving the house this morning. It didn't feel that bad. Well, I wasn't mentally challenged. Enough. Stop it. It's like Curse of Oak Island. Stop it. No more. I'm not even going to talk about it. I am. My radio show, I can say this. Curse of Oak Island. I guarantee you, I'm making the prediction now. I think they end in May. And they're going to have some kind of hook at the end in May when they end this stupid show. Because I watched it Wednesday morning. And there was, as my dear Italian mother would say, it was stugatz. It was nothing. And they're going to hook us at the end of the show. Well, they're going to hook at the end of the season. And say, next year is going to be. Any glimmer is gone. Any glimmer of hope is gone. I give up. No moss. So, anyway, it's been kind of a. It does seem like I got a lot of house stuff done this week, construction-wise, primarily because last weekend I started, went in the old house and just started doing touch-up, touch-up the paint. And I had to do this because it just drives me crazy. And this is just maybe an obsessive thing, You have little nails or screws in the wall to hang pictures, mirrors. We had those wall mount TV things. All that came off. And I can't leave the holes. Even a little hole from a finishing nail, it's got to go. So caulked everything, painted everything. It took a while. There's a lot of stuff. the boss lady has me moving pictures around. And I just said, okay, dear, I'll put it over there. And she knows I kind of wince at it. But so here's the deal. New house, new wall, mostly new walls, where I'm redoing the rooms. Those 3M things that don't make holes in the wall? They're not cheap. I forget what they call them. Hookers or something. I don't know. Anyway, they just stick on the wall. We had one in the whole house, and you just pull a little tab, and it comes off the wall clean. That's all I'm doing. Well, with one exception, I've already hung one mirror. I did put one screw in the wall already. But I've got to stop. There's something I got to get at the store. Those 3M sticky things. But anyway, so all the touch-ups done. My wife said to me, she had left her vacuum, the good vacuum, at the house. And she said, I need the vacuum. Now, we have multiple vacuums. I don't even want to count them. I need the vacuum. So I said, okay. I went and got it. I vacuumed the whole house. Got to clean the floors because it's mud season in Maine. So I'm going to clean the floors probably today. I redid the heating system. Heating system works fine, but it had a lot of Tom experiments that I did. So I got the heating system back to a point where if a heating person walks in, they they see normal things. And I had the system running as a, just to give background for those of you who might be interested. I had the heating system running as an unpressurized system with the reservoir tank and blah. So I made it a pressurized system. And I kid you not, I could have done this while I was living there, but I've been mulling this over for since December, and thinking, this is going to be a pain in the you-know-what. And it just went smooth as butter. It was nothing. It got it all done. Everything worked fine. So Basement is empty. It's not empty. One of my kids has stuff stored down there that has to go bye-bye. I have a feeling I'm going to be moving it. But all the banjo stuff is gone and is completely disorganized. I am chagrined that I don't – I could probably find most anything I wanted to, but it would take a while. It's not organized. So I've got to – I realized the barn, which is not a priority project, which was where all the banjo antics will take place in the future – we got to get some insulation in there. It's not bad on a warm, like, what is it, tomorrow? Tomorrow's going to be in the 50s or Monday? Monday in the 50s? In the 50s, it's fantastic out there. Day like today, if the sun's out, it's not bad. But, it's you know, there's no insulation. So we got to deal with that. We'll see how that goes. But, you know, with general progress. General progress, no complaints. I had hurt my leg the day before we moved, so it was great moving with the bone spurs or whatever. It's finally better, and I'm hitting the ground running. I literally am on the move. But we got to take a break. It's 8:15. It is hot and cold. Phone number is 1-800-966-1039. Text line 601-207-4478. What'd you say? Bow, bow, bow. I got that.
Well, here I sit high getting ideas. Ain't nothing but a fool to live like this. Out all night and running wild. Woman sitting home with a month old child. Dang me, dang me. They ought to take a rope and hang me. High from the highest tree. Woman, would you weep for me? One more time. Just sitting around drinking with the rest of the guys. Six rounds bought and I bought five. And I spent the groceries and half the rent.
All right, we're back. It's 8:19. It's hot and cold Saturday morning. Good morning again. So the project I did get done this week was the laundry room. Last weekend, while I was doing touch-up, my wife was at the old house with me doing laundry. a week's worth. You know, you should do maybe a load of laundry every other day. I don't know. I'm not allowed near the washing machine or the dryer. But so she came up the house and did the laundry while I was doing all my stuff. But need to get the laundry room set up. So Pete and I got – we've had the washer and dryer. We picked up Maytag washer and dryer that were dented. I like dented stuff, I guess. I'm going to dent them anyway. So, and they were on the side. You're never going to see it. So laundry room had a laundry sink in it, which was for a long time while I was working on the house before we moved in, the only running water I had because I had set it up because I'd pulled everything. We had pulled out all the plumbing, but it was in the wrong location for, you know, usually the washer and dryer are next to each other. And the way it was set up, that wasn't the way it was. So I had to move the laundry sink over, which was simple. I didn't have to do much replumbing there. I did have to run some new water lines. And then the washer went next to it. And there I had to replumb the drain and then the dryer. And anyway, so it's all in and it's ready to roll. Today will be the first run of the new setup in the laundry room. And put a Vantec down on the floor. The floor is ancient pine boards that are just worn. And so I've got a Vantec under the appliances for now till we do a finished floor. Unfortunately, that room, the laundry room, has an old, and I mean old, sliding glass door. And old being the operative term here, was not installed properly, wasn't flashed. So the sill underneath it is gone. And so I couldn't do the whole room floor because when the weather gets warmer, I've got to replace that sill. And right outside that door is a big deck. And I hadn't really been out on the deck much, mostly because it's been covered with snow. It's big. And my wife thought we were taking it down. I don't think we have to take it down to do the sill repair, but it's a big deck. It's not pretty. It's not. It needs some attention. It needs to be it's all pressure treated, so it's got that going for it. But it's going to take a little bit of time to get it set up. But laundry room's done, so that's a positive, and we'll see how it goes. I'll report back next week. The water comes in, the water goes out, nothing's leaking. So I take that as a good sign. Anyway, let's go to the phones at 1-800-966-1039. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Hey, good morning, Tom. You've been down to our place down in Brooklyn, did an energy assessment. We just had our boiler go bad, and we've got to make quick decisions about replacing either with oil or propane. Mm. Can you just kind of review the pros and cons of doing that?
What do you have now?
We have oil now.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I'd be glad to. Hit the buttons here, Tom. There we go. I have propane. Fuel. As a matter of fact, I did pull up here fuel costs. Propane is more than oil, and where are we at? Well, it's the spread's not that wide. So going on the governor's, they're saying heating oil is $5.40 a gallon. Did it go up that much that quick? Propane is $3.44 a gallon. I guess I have to look up oil price next spring. I mean, normal circumstances, oil is cheaper than propane. With this Gulf thing going. That's right now might be changed. I kind of like oil. Where you have oil already, you sort of have the infrastructure. It's a cheaper fuel, and it's probably going to stay that way. If you're putting in propane, a lot of people, contractors are leaning towards doing propane boilers. I guess I would get quotes both ways. Obviously, they have to be quick. Unfortunately, we still have a little bit of cold weather going on. But, I mean, for the short term, it sounds like you might be relying on electric heaters or something like that. The short term, I'd want to get some quotes both ways. Long term, I would say that I would anticipate 20% more cost involved with propane. So, if you're spending $2,000 a year on oil, you're going to spend a little bit more, $2,400 a year, right? Is that 20%? Yeah. The other option is heat pumps, because you do have rebates there. The cost of heat pumps is going to be less than propane or oil, and would give you the luxury of air conditioning and dehumidification in the summertime. I'm kind of looking forward to having the mini split running in my office when we do need AC. I think you can get a heat pump in pretty quick, maybe quicker than oil or propane, or maybe more quicker than propane. Oil is just a matter of swapping out the boiler. I guess I need to prepare you for the fact you're going to wince whatever you get a quote on. With the exception of heat pumps, because I think there still might be some rebates kicking around for that. So I do remember your house, as I recall, you had a crawl space. So, you know, the heat pump might be an option that's worth considering. So I hope that helps. Do we have time? Yeah, we got time. Let's go over to line one. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Hi, good morning, Tom. I just have a quick question. What's the difference between a heat pump and a mini split, or is it the same thing?
I'm talking about same thing. Mini split heat pump.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay, all right.
All right, thank you.
Are they still giving out the Efficiency Maine discounts on that?
I don't know. I haven't looked. As a matter of fact, Efficiency Maine's coming to my house on Friday to inspect the spray foam.
Oh, so can you ask him for me?
I will ask. I'll have that conversation with him. Sure will.
All right, thanks.
All right, thanks. All right. Bye-bye. Yeah, you know, you know, if you're so inclined, a mini split is a can be a DIY project. A lot of the units are pre-charged. You do need to have a refrigerator. You need to know a little bit, or you could install it yourself and then have a refrigeration person come in and hook it up, or you just have a refrigeration person do it anyway. The one I did in my office, I picked up a unit that was on sale at Home Depot, a company named Costway, which is just a kind of a front company like Temu or Vivo or something like that. High efficiency. I have not seen a big bump in our electric bill because of the heat pump operation, and we use the heat pump a lot. We usually just shut it off at night. We can turn it down, but usually we just shut them down. You know, we're only there for 8 hours, but maybe I'm spending $20 a month on extra electric, running the mini split for heating our office, and it's comfortable. So and it's quiet, and I am looking forward to the air conditioning. I can't help it. I'm sorry. I'm getting I'm on heart medication, so it makes me sweat more. Doesn't take much to break me into a sweat. Is that a good thing? I don't know. excuse me. The other project I've got going on that I'm really anxious to get into, but I really have to take some precedent with other things, is the wood stove. And I mentioned I got a wood stove, got a Yodel 8 wood stove, which is a pretty big stove. That was a catalytic converter stove originally. And I checked with the parts that are damaged, that it warped, were related to the catalytic part of things, are not replaceable anymore. They're not available. One part is, the other part isn't. The important one I can't get. So, and then the catalyst probably had to be replaced. So I got thinking about it. I said, let me just see what is out there. And I think I could probably replace all the catalytic stuff with the regular baffles that would go into a earlier version of that stove. And I checked with a company. I said, you know, if anybody does, you know, who sells the parts, has anybody done this? And they didn't know, or they're not going to say. I decided, wait a minute, you know, I've done enough wood stove and wood boiler monkeying around pellet boiler stuff over the years. Let's go back into my brain and try to pull up what I used to do. So I ordered a bunch of vermiculite refractory, not firebrick, but vermiculite refractory, which is lower mass. And I'm going to retrofit the stove with refractory and baffles that are, again, low mass, that should hopefully make it a clean burn. Keep it a clean burning stove. Maybe not as efficient as the catalytic, but we'll see. And I will report back. So those, all that stuff came this week, and I've got the stove all apart down to the shell. The top is off. The sides are in place. The door is off because, you know, you just pop that right off. So it's as light as it's ever going to be, unless I took it completely apart and did one piece at a time, which I don't want to do. Vacuumed it out last week, and it was in the laundry room. So one of the things in getting the laundry, I mean, there's all these things I got to do because I just keep moving junk around. I had to clean the stove so I could do the laundry room so I don't have wood ash and stuff everywhere. So first thing I did, I think last weekend, was clean the stove and vacuum all the ash up. So and I will move that into the kitchen where it is going. And then I will assemble it in place right there. But the last bit of refractory, vermiculite refractory, came yesterday. So, and I'm looking forward to that because I get to play with fire. So, as soon as I can, I'm going to dig into that one. We'll see how that goes. It's I got to take a break though. It's 8:31. I talk too much. I used to get in a lot of trouble when I was in school talking too much. Now they pay me the big bucks. Man, I tell you, what a world, huh?
When I think back on all the crap I learned in high school, it's a wonder I can think at all. And my lack of education hasn't hurt me none. I can read the writing on the wall. Hold a throne. Makes you think all the world's a sunny day. Oh yeah, I got an eye on camera. I love to take a photograph, so mama don't take my Kodachrome away.
Back, it's 8:37. I got a couple of messages in here. Let me hit the thing there. Come on, Tom. There we go. Okay. Somebody sent a message in. Have to disagree with you. The cost of propane is literally half the cost of oil. With the efficiency, I've saved thousands of dollars by switching. That's good. I remember years ago there was a guy making a boiler, and he made the claim that there was a major savings by switching to his boiler. Well, you know, here's the bottom line. I'm running a propane boiler right now. It's a condensing propane boiler. It's 97% efficient. It's got the test data on. It's fantastic. It doesn't get much more efficient than that. so let's just look at the numbers real quick. You know, probably your old boiler wasn't very efficient. If it was running with a tankless tankless coil in the boiler, boiler's running where you're drawing hot water off that oil-fired boiler, the efficiency when you're not heating is awful. And maintaining that slightly jacketed boiler isn't necessarily going to be very efficient, even in the heating season for domestic hot water. Whereas a propane boiler will only fire it, a combi boiler, which would do domestic hot water and space heat, would have that similar efficiency and only come on when you need hot water. So there's some efficiency, major efficiency advantage there. But let's just look at the numbers of the fuel costs, because that's what we want to talk about. So if I went off the governor's thing here, which may or may not be accurate, it looked like it's up to date. Propane, they're saying on average the state of Maine's $3.44 a gallon. Okay, so at 97% efficiency, which is what I got at my house, you're looking at $39 per million BTUs of energy. So let's go over to an oil system. Oil, I didn't run it with current oil price because that's kind of a fluke, but I'm going to call it $3.50 a gallon for oil. Oil has more BTUs per gallon. So let's assume that the boiler's running at 85% efficiency. Way less than 97% for sure. It's got to stay sub-condensing. When we factor in the efficiency there, we're at $29 for a newer, efficient boiler. Not domestic hot water built in, just a boiler. So there's some generic differences there. I'm glad you're saving energy. I'm glad you're saving money. But, you know, when you upgrade boilers, you usually get a savings. And that's against whatever it costs to put in, which ain't going to be cheap. So that's where I make my case that maybe a mini split is a reasonable cost. And I'm going by propane cost per gallon, not propane cost per pound. That just gets too confusing. I'm going BTUs to BTUs, gallon price. You pay for it by the gallon. You don't. I don't pay for it by the pound anyway. My bill comes through by the gallons. So, the other aspect of this in my boiler, which is a condensing boiler, you have to neutralize the condensate that comes out of the boiler, which is acidic. So that's another maintenance. It's not a big maintenance factor, but it's a pain in the neck. I've got a drain and it's all hooked. It's just like, come on. I will probably be putting in a heat pump sometime this year when the heating season is over. On a condensing boiler, there can be some longevity issues as well. You know, whatever floats your boat. You look at the numbers. That's what I say. You got to look at the numbers. It's unfortunate that the caller was under the gun, because this does take some time to sort out the numbers as to which makes the most sense. I would say in his case, it could be just swapping boilers, but that ain't going to be cheap either. And mini split might be the best fit. So, okay, I'm getting a bunch of messages here. Let's see. Propane, where am I here? Propane, I got one of those Rinnai heaters last fall. It heats up my kitchen, bathroom, and two bedrooms in my camp. November propane was $247. Recently, I think it was $229. You must have a big tank or something. That's a good deal. My fill-up for the last month, end of February, end of March, was $109. That's basically only heating my house at $72. I find it very affordable. Good. If it works for you, I'm not going to argue with you. I've just, numbers is numbers. And $229 is a fantastic deal. If somebody likes you, because that's nowhere near, in my neck of the woods, what propane's going for. Tom, does foil-faced rigid foam actually have a higher R value than the same thickness foam without any foil? Home Depot 2-inch foam, R13 foil-faced versus R10 no foil. I think you're talking two different kinds of insulation here. Foil-faced foam is yellow, usually, foam. It's called polyisocyanurate foam. It's a urethane foam. And the R value on that is six point something to 7 per inch of thickness. The foil doesn't really enter into the equation very much, other than it's shiny. It's a nice surface, I guess. It's not really an effective radiant. It is an effective radiant barrier, but you're not, if you're using that, say, on the sidewall of a house, or using it really anywhere in a household installation, you don't need a radiant barrier. You can use paper-faced polyiso foam and get the same performance. I think part of it is probably the facer is cheaper, or it attracts people because it's shiny. It's a shiny object. Honest to God, when you stop and think, you got an inch of foam. Nothing radiates through that. You know, radiant energy is that heat you feel coming off the wood stove when you stand or you put your hand up to an incandescent light bulb. You feel that heat. That's radiant heat. Or you're out of the sun and you feel the sun shining on you. That's radiant energy. You put a piece of foil in between the sun and you, it reflects that radiant energy back. But if you took a piece of unfaced foam or a piece of cardboard and put it in between you and the sun, you're not getting any radiant energy through that. So the radiant barrier is effective in some applications. For foam insulation, has no bearing. The R10 you're talking about is styrofoam, which is pink, blue, gray, and that is a different kind of insulation. and you don't need, it does not need to be foil faced. They also sell at Home Depot, being as we're picking on Home Depot, foil faced beadboard. Now, the beadboard is white. It's beads like a styrofoam cup. And the foil facer is on there, not as a radiant barrier, but really to hold the beadboard together. Because beadboard is a pretty weak foam. It's a lot. You see this in a plastic, a styrofoam cup. It's a lot of little beads that get heated up and they expand and fuse together. The facer, the foil, and if you just have a piece of beadboard insulation, it's like a styrofoam cup. Styrofoam cup's probably stronger because it's fused more, so it's waterproof. Regular beadboard you can break off with two fingers, no problem, even if it was a couple inches thick. The facer helps hold it together so they can ship it and handle it better. But that's a little bit lower R value. That probably for 2 inches would be around R8, R8.4, something like that. So there's differences here along the way. And foil facing, really, every so often there's this push, and it's about due to come up again, where they sell foil-faced something. And most recently, it has been foil-faced bubble wrap. There's also foil-faced, the thin, flexible plastic foam that they use for packaging. It's maybe an eighth of an inch, quarter inch thick. They'll foil-face that and sell it as a insulation material. And with the foil, I swear to God, I think it's kind of like shining a light at a deer. We tend to react to shiny stuff in that the way deers do when they see headlights. And it really does not have the effectiveness of a barrier or a thickness of insulation. So the polyisofoam is generally the highest R value you can easily get. Styrofoam is a little bit less, but a little bit different. Could be used in different applications, and then beadboard would be the least. And they're all pretty effective insulations. Whether or not they're worth using in an application, it depends on the application and what you're trying to accomplish. So I hope that helps. Let's see. We got a call. Let's go over to line one. If I hit the magic button, there we go. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Yeah, how you doing this morning?
Good. How are you?
Good. We've got a camp, it's a house really, on a lake, and everyone's been living in it all the time we've had it. And next winter, we plan on not heating it.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a sewage ejection pump tank. And we're wondering what to do about that.
So The ejection pump is in the septic or in the basement? Where?
It's in the septic. It has a separate box, a cement box.
But it's underground.
Tank. Yes, underground, yeah.
I would probably just cover it with some hay.
Yeah.
Or you could put foam over it and cover that with some soil. How it's probably not down very deep because, generally, How far down is it?
The top of the tank is about 18 inches down.
Okay. Generally, there's enough biological action in that system that they don't freeze up. But it, just to be safe, it doesn't hurt to put something like hay over it. Or again, foam. But I think hay is more practical in most applications, and it probably wouldn't freeze anyway, but with hay on it, it's much less likely. Because what's happening is, being that close to the surface, I assume the camp is someplace north of Bangor, Maine, the frost is going to penetrate from the surface down, and if there's any ground covering there, it's reasonably effective. And not getting too deep into the ground. You've got the septic tank down there just stewing away. There's stuff happening in there all the time, and that's generating some heat. So and of course, the ground is somewhat warm compared to the air temperature. By putting a layer of hay, and I would say maybe a foot or so, and maybe even putting a tarp over it, I don't think you're going to have an issue.
the sewerage that's in there, when we turn the water off and the power off, that'll generate some heat during the winter?
I think it does. And if you stop and think about it, most septic tanks are not down 4 feet. They're not below frost. They're nowhere near below frost level. They're down a foot, 18 inches, something like that. And we and there's enough tanks out there that don't operate in the winter that I don't think it's a major concern. But, you know, belt and suspenders approach for me would be to put hay down.
Okay.
All right. Good luck.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yep.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's not absolute, but it's pretty darn close, I think, even if you did nothing. Now, granted, if the system's being used year-round, you're always putting relatively warm water in there, keeping the whole biological process going. I think by having some insulation over top of the tank, you'd be in reasonably good shape. Let's see. Message, you should shut the power off to the sewer pump, even if the tank doesn't freeze, the discharge line burnt the pump. Well, if you're not using it, it's not going to, yes, you should shut off the pump. But if you're not using it, the pump shouldn't come on. But absolutely, the pump should be off. If you're shutting down the whole camp, that includes power and water and the whole nine yards. So, all right, let's see. Where were we? I really want to get into doing the wood stove. I really do. It's just, you get to play with fire. What's cooler than that? And I just obviously want to see. I remember years ago, a friend of mine who worked in a hearth store showed me vermiculite fire brick, which a lot of stove companies use now. I suspect it's more expensive. I know it's more expensive than regular clay or cement, refractory cement fire brick. But it's also lighter, and it tends to heat up quickly because it's lower mass. And it's reflecting heat back on the fire, which helps to make it burn more cleanly and get the fire established sooner. The catch is, being lighter material, it's a little bit softer, and it doesn't stand up to banging around throwing big hunks of wood in the stove the way regular fire brick does, or cast iron baffles do. And the Yodel stoves generally had cast iron baffles, especially the older stoves, and they would warp over time, and that was a consumable. If you had it, you know, you could replace it. It just hangs in the stove. It's not a big deal to replace it. I think some of the newer, and correct me if I've not had my hands, the newest Yodel stove I've had my hands on was 20 years old, and that was recent. So I think a lot of the newer ones are using refractory or fire brick inside of them. And the stove that I have in the house that we're selling has Hearthstone Craftbury or something. And that has, I don't think it has baffles on the sides or the back, but it has a refractory, I think it's ceramic fiber, baffle on the top of the firebox, and the fire has to hit that and then go around it. And I bought that stove used, relatively new, and it wasn't, I think I had to replace, I didn't have to replace the baffle, but I took the top off because it didn't seem like it was working right. Somebody had put a new baffle in and put it in up backwards, upside down, front to back, whatever, and so it wasn't working right. So you got to read the directions. If you don't know what you're doing and it comes with directions, this is a lesson hard learned by me. You read the directions if you don't know what you're doing. Duh. And I found the directions online. I'm looking at them. Yeah, something wrong here. And it was, in fact, the baffle. So we got to take a break. I guess it's just about time. It's 8:55. It is hot and cold Saturday morning. Our phone number is 1-800-966-1039. Text line 601-207-4478. Pete will be on next hour. I got him wound up. It doesn't take much. Anyway, we'll be back.
All right. 1, 2, 3, 4.
All right, we're back. It's 9:05, hot and cold Saturday morning, and a little bit of Beach Boys there. Remember that song when it, if you're old enough to remember when that came out, that was almost kind of controversial. Times have changed. Oh, man. I need to update. I had mentioned first hour that I was doing touch-up in the house that we'd moved out of because we're getting ready to sell it. And I was lamenting the fact that I had, and nobody's, I just wanted to say, nobody has called me up and said, you need to correct this statement. But there were nail holes in the walls where, you know, pictures were hung and stuff. And I will go and use the 3M. And somebody told me the name of the product is called a Command. It sticks on the wall. You don't have to make any holes. And that's what I'll be doing. But there was one place where there were a lot of holes. That was in the banjo room where Mr. Doofus here had put nice strips of oak across the wall, screwed into the studs, and then hangers for instruments on the oak. And, of course, the banjos are gone. I can't leave 15 hangers on the wall in what would be a bedroom for a normal human being. So I took them off the wall. I brought them with me, of course. But the mounting holes, if you will, the ones went in the studs. I had two at each stud. And then where the instrument hangers went into the oak, they went through the oak. So there were a lot of holes. I'm the one who made the most holes in the whole damn house. So, excuse me, all fixed. And that's why God gave us latex caulk, if you didn't know that. Took a while. Matter of fact, I had gone earlier in the week to do the caulking, and then I was doing kills over everything and then painting it. So a lot of fun. You know, there's nothing like touching up all those stupid holes I made. Let's go to the phones at 1-800-966-1039. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Hey, Tom, this is Dick in Hancock. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. I wanted to see if I could get you to switch into car talk mode for a minute to talk about my 2004 Lexus.
Yeah, what's up?
Which has been, well, it was mistreated. Somebody backed into it, and they trashed the hood and caught one of the headlight assemblies on the way.
Okay.
And so I'm getting educated in headlight assemblies now.
Yeah.
I bought a new one on eBay, and when it showed up, everything is right except for the fact that it's not set up for high-intensity bulbs, which I guess are a whole different animal.
Yeah.
And what I'm trying to do is rather than to try to – I can't send the headlight assembly back. They won't take it. But is there – have you in your dealings ever switched over, found anybody who makes up, harnesses – so that I could switch from the high intensity back to, say, halogen or even LED?
I know you can do it. It's obviously you need sockets. I would, even though the vendor says no returns, you could try doing a return. eBay has gotten very user-friendly for buyers, not necessarily for sellers. And eBay will sometimes orchestrate the return. And you just say, you know, it's the wrong one. It's not a, you know, high intensity. It's not a halogen. It's high intensity, and see if they'll take it back. I'm trying to think here. On the high intensity bulbs, the way that works is there's only a single bulb. And it operates off a ballast, which is underneath the you'll have to convert both sides, by the way. You can't just do one side because they look completely different. But the DC coming in that would go into the ballast for the high-intensity bulb can run the low beam. And then for the high beam, there's a little dew flicker, if you will, a solenoid, that flips the beam up a little bit so it shoots out further, and that can be used to operate what would be the high beam halogen. Is that worth all the aggravation? Probably not. But I would just give it a go if you see if they'll be honest, say I got the wrong one, and give an explanation, and eBay will probably step in if the seller is adamant about it.
Good. I'll give that a try then.
Did you find a hood?
I did. I had to drive down to New Hampshire to get it. The old days of just going to the salvage yard seemed to be gone.
Yeah, it's I needed some airbags. I bought a car that needed a whole bunch of airbags, and I found a good deal at a yard in New Hampshire. And, you know, airbags aren't huge. They're pretty petite. I didn't need every airbag, but I needed some. And the deal was right. And then they wanted $170 to ship from New Hampshire up to me. And I'm like, no, we're not playing this game. I once had a courier go to New Hampshire and pick up a whole front bumper assembly with all the grills and everything for like $150. And, you know, I can't afford that much time to go to New Hampshire and do that. But for $150, it was money well spent. But yeah, that's a long trip.
Well, I just kind of coordinated. We had a trip to Portland on the calendar anyway, so just went the extra. In the long run, that worked out pretty well.
Yeah, it's kind of a fun project. Pete's going to squeak at me today about it because I've got a couple salvage cars I'm working on. He doesn't like it when I buy them, but you know the thing about a car, if you're buying a salvage car, is you know it ran up to the point it was in an accident, probably. And so a lot of things are off the list that might otherwise be a potential issue if you're buying, say, at an auction or something. I'm pretty picky about it. You know, swapping out a hood on a Lexus or any car is pretty simple, really. And headlight is, too, for that matter. Sometimes a little bit more monkeying around doing a headlight, but it's, you know, if a human being put it together, a human being can take it apart and put it back together again.
Right. One thing I did find out on I had to repaint the hood. The difference between painting out of a rattle can and a good spray gun is a lot. But one way to change the odds in your favor is to buy a really good rattle can, and they go for a lot. They go for $40. But the quality of what you get out of that can, I can't tell you how much difference it made in it. I messed around. I think I went through three cans worth and wound up sanding all that off, and then went out and bought a real, you know, instead of a $12 can, like I say, a $40 can. It took me two to do the entire hood, two of color and then two more of clear coat.
Yeah.
But I think it looks pretty good.
Good.
It wasn't looking good before, so.
Yeah. Good. All right.
All right. Well, thanks, Tom.
Okay. Good luck, Dick. Bye-bye. Yeah, it's, even if they say no return, it's worth the shot to do that. Especially if something like that, because you've got to replace the other light. Now you're replacing two lights, and you've got to do some rewiring. There's different sockets, and I've done it. It's not a nightmare, but it helps if you have the wiring diagram, and you don't want to go there if you don't have to. I got to take a break. It's 9:15. It is hot and cold this Saturday morning, and here we go.
Somewhere there is heaven, how high the moon. There is no moon above when love is far away too, till it comes true. you love me as I love you. Somewhere there's music, how near, how far. Somewhere there's heaven is where you are.
And we're back. It's 8:15. It's 9:15. Excuse me. It's hot and cold Saturday morning. How High the Moon, two different versions. This week was Ella Fitzgerald's birthday on the 25th. Of course, that's one of her. That was her song. One of her songs. She had a lot of songs, actually. How High the Moon is one of those. I play a musical instrument. It doesn't matter, primarily banjo, right? I don't know the chords. They're just there. I know the placements. I have to stop and think about where I am because I just don't focus on that. I just focus on the sound. And I'm sitting there one night, and I'm just fooling around with the banjo, and I said, that sounds like part of How High the Moon. And it's one of those things, yeah, you just work it up. So a lot of my repertoire, if you want to call it that, is the fact that it's a song I know, How High the Moon, Wizard of Oz songs I know, I could do those on the banjo. It isn't necessarily bluegrass standards, although I do play a couple. And I was in the office for a little bit. I was waiting for somebody to come back so I could leave. And I picked up a banjo and was playing it, I don't know, for a couple minutes. And I realized how out of shape my fingertips are. You know, if you play a musical instrument, your fingertips get pretty tough so they don't hurt. And they hurt. I'm like, oh, my God, am I that out of, you know, it's been 3.5 months. I've really not touched banjos. I've been working on the house. And I got to start practicing, just to toughen up the fingertips. I mean, you know, God, I don't like that. You know, what's this? Use it or lose it. What a great pervasive thing to say. It doesn't matter what it is. It's anyway. We'll leave it at that. Closets. I've been. I've got to do a video. I haven't done a video in a week or so, just because 2 weeks, because it hurt my leg and I wasn't doing much. And anyway, started working on closets in the project house, and the hadn't touched it. I was ready to do it. As a matter of fact, this guy, I have to. Well, I got to hit the machine. Now, this isn't a tune that he requested, but it's fast enough. It just hits you right in the face, kind of like this guy does. And that radio personality would be Pete Gozy. Hey, Pete.
I think you try to find music that is just the complete opposite of what I would pick, and then you play that.
Pete, that's, come on.
Yeah.
That's okay. Billy Strings right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. How are you?
I'm all right. So, election year.
Uh-oh.
And I'm not just available to vote for. If you're running for an office and you need somebody to be kind of, like, and you're a little bit dumb, like most people running for office are, and you need someone to, like, prop you up and Kermit you a little bit and tell you what to say and how to get people happy with you, I'm happy to be the power behind the curtain. I'll be the great, powerful Oz if you need me to. And then you obviously take the blame for when I have a bad idea. But, I mean, you know, and I'm cheap. I'm a lot cheaper than any of your other sycophants you got working for you.
So you're saying if you're stupid enough to run for office, I'm here to help.
I'm here to help, and I'm pliable when it comes to finance. So, like, I'll jump ship and go across aisles and, you know.
All right. All right,
and then, but don't be surprised if there's a coup, because I mean I will be building a little bit of a cadre behind the scenes of you know, of your own people. We'll get radio.
So you're mercenary too. Wow.
Yeah.
I kind of knew that.
I'm not idle. So listen, I'm not a conspiracy theory guy, okay?
Okay.
There's certain things I believe and don't believe, but I don't go heavy into conspiracy theories. But mm-hmm. There's one I want to bring up.
Okay.
In the state of Maine, per 100,000 people, the annual mortality rate is 822. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
The city of Bangor has a population of approximately 32,000 people, which comparatively that makes the mortality rate in Bangor approximately 274 deaths annually.
Mm-hmm.
So that means in the last 30 years, there have been approximately 8,220 people have passed away that resided in Bangor.
Okay.
Now, of that 8,220 people, approximately, that passed away in Bangor, let's assume a staggering 50% of them, this is over 30 years, mind you, got cremated or interned somewhere else, like they're originally from Wyoming and they wanted to be buried there.
Sure.
So that still leaves 4,000 people. Where are they? Where are these 4,000 graves? Because here's the thing. There's a new side to Mount Hope Cemetery. Everybody knows there's a cool side to Mount Hope Cemetery with the water and the ducks and the turtles. And there's the other side, which just has graves. There is not 4,000 graves over there. Where are... See, this is the conspiracy thing. It's like, when was the last time a new cemetery opened anywhere?
Mm-hmm.
Where is everybody? What are we doing with them? Right?
Right.
Isn't that weird? And you know what brought this up? Yoo-hoo. I was thinking about Yoo-hoo, and the thoughts leapfrogged, and I got to this.
Okay. You are my son. I can tell.
Yoo-hoo the drink led me to the possible conspiracy theory that where is everybody being buried? Shouldn't there be like way more graveyards than there are? I know it's a little bit macabre, but I know where Grandma and Grandpa are, but where's the other 4,000 people who died in the last 30 years? Were they real? Am I real? What's happening? Who's keeping Yoo-hoo in business?
These are many questions we don't have answers for, and man, I tell you what, I'm glad you're here to bring this up.
Yeah. Well, I had a lot of notes for that one.
Okay.
So what are you up to? What have you been talking about?
Oh, I don't know. Doing touch-up at the house. I was just going to start talking about I framed up both closets that we took apart, 2 weeks ago?
Oh, thank goodness.
Yeah.
The closets that we tore out have been built again.
Yeah, but they're bigger. Bigger and better.
Oh, good.
And they're going to be, one of the reasons is, A, I got to get it done, and B, I've got all the red cedar in the kitchen, so I got to get it off the floor because we'll be putting down floors soon. And
I got to cycle back around to how is this house easier than just building a house? Because you're literally just taking it apart and building the house that you want inside of it.
Yeah,
so.
It's a cool old house, and it's in a location that I like a lot. And that location is not available to build on because there's a house there, and it's an old house. It's 160 years
old.
It's not a knockdown.
we're knocking it down, so I don't know.
and then we get to work on the barn. You know, I was in put stuff in the barn yesterday.
Barn's the easy part.
Yeah, the barn is going to be the easy part, but. It's going to be fun. And we got the stages already in the barn. So we're already
ready to go.
We're actually
be able to use it for basically what it was intended for.
Yeah, yeah. I was using it for a workbench. It was very handy for that. So anyway, so I started cleaning the kitchen last night because you have to go through the kitchen, which is a construction zone, to get to the laundry room. And today is the today's the trial run on the laundry room for your mother. And she's already had cleaned that pathway last week for something. So, and of course, I messed it all up again because I've been cutting wood, doing the closets and stuff. So I took time last night to straighten up, to clean up the pathway. So we have a clear path to China from the United States. I'm sorry?
Why don't you set the saw up on the porch outside the laundry room?
Well, because
it's a little bit more.
I should, and I at some point I will, but I have to obviously move it in inside and outside as the weather, or have it wrapped up in plastic. So I haven't done that yet, though. But this weekend I'm doing the red cedar in the closets, which means I'm going to set the chop saw up in the kitchen and fill the kitchen with red cedar sawdust. So that'll be fun.
Yeah, but at least it'll smell nice.
It's going to smell very nice, and it is fast. And, you know, I'm planning out this kitchen closet, the closet thing, and I said, I'm going to put red cedar in there. And I'm like, wait a minute. You know, red cedar comes, the cedar you buy in the box that's quarter inch thick, that's tongue and groove, is 4 foot lengths and 16 inch lengths. And there ain't nothing in that closet that fits that dimension. And the back of the closet is foam because it's an outside wall and I foamed it. So I had to stop and do a little think on that one. And said, okay, I'm going to put OSB up inside the walls so I have nailing surface all around. And so that's done. The doors are hung. And I'm going to start as soon as I got to do a little touch-up up at the house today to wrap things up. And then I'm going to start on the red cedar. I can't wait.
You're not worried about the nails working their way back out of the OSB?
Oh, well, it screws, first of all, and they ain't coming out.
You glue it. You hit the OSB with a little bit of adhesive first, and you'll be fine.
Yeah, no. I use fasteners. I like screws. Yeah, just screw it together and make it solid. And I want to tell you, she's some solid. So, excuse me. And then in the upstairs bathroom, we have no heat. So I picked up on the Amazon a electric heater that comes with a remote control, because why not? But here's the cool thing, and I think every electric heater should have this, but it's electronics and it'd be a pain in the neck because it's going to break at some point. But it's a great concept when you shut it off either remotely or with your, you know, just hitting the button. The heater goes through a cool down cycle of 20 seconds. So if somebody inadvertently threw something over that heater, not that anybody I know would do that, but it happens. The heater has cooled down, so it's not a fire hazard, and that last little bit of heat energy is actually utilized as opposed to being wasted, so to speak, or is into the room where it's sensible heat. That's what we want, a sensible heat. Yep. Pete, I got to take one. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, even without that, isn't the heat, when you turn it off, the heat's still going to radiate out into the room?
The ideal part of it is it cools down the unit so it's not as hot, because they do get pretty hot. I got to take a break, though. It's 9:31, and we've gone over a little bit.
Let's settle down for a minute.
Okay, well, we'll catch our breath. We'll come back. We'll talk with Pete. It is Hot and Cold Saturday morning, 9:31.
Our trains are running towards each other. Shotguns are pointed at my head. Tornado clouds are forming o'er the crossroads. H-bombs are falling towards my bed. But I'm still here. I'm still here, and how about that? My city may be falling, but I'm still here. The assassination squad has got their orders.
There's a holdup in the Bronx. Brooklyn's broken out in fights. There's a traffic jam in Harlem that's backed up to Jackson Heights.
There's a scout troop short a child. Khrushchev's doing Idlewild.
Car 54, where are you?
Okay. Pete, do you recognize that at all?
I think it's the Car 54, Where Are You theme song done by an orchestra.
Yeah, but do you know who was in that movie, in that show?
Leslie Nielsen.
No, Fred Gwynne.
Fred Gwynne.
Yeah.
You know, one time I was at Goodwill in Belfast, and they had in the employee pick section, they had three framed photos of Fred Gwynne.
Did you grab
them? They weren't signed or anything. They were just, no, I didn't buy them. But it was just one of those things where it's like you kind of wonder, what are the circumstances of someone having three framed photos of Fred Gwynne in their home?
Well, yeah. I think that was one of his, I think he was on Broadway before that, but that was his first big thing, and I remember that show like it was yesterday. Oh, God, that makes me old. Jeez.
Well, you know, yesterday I went into Bangor, and before I go to Bangor, to town, as I call it, I always map out in my head where I'm going and how long I think it's going to take me.
Sure.
Make it sort of a game to see if I get back at the time I think I'm going to. I was way ahead of schedule. I was at Walmart. I was about 15, 20 minutes ahead of schedule. I'm at Walmart, but then I ran into this guy I know, Tim, right? I'm talking to Tim. We're talking about his daughter's car, and it's got a low tire, and then I had to go fill the tire with air, and it, you know, turned into a whole thing. Thanks, Tim. And so we're standing in the toy aisle, and this kid who is about 11 years old walks by us, looks at what I'm holding, because I was holding Star Wars figures, and then he goes, "Do you like Star Wars?" And he seemed like almost like baffled by it because I was old. So I'm like, "Yeah, I like Star Wars." And he gave me the most legit, like, it was such a genuine high five, like just hand in the air. He didn't say anything. And it took me a minute to realize what he was doing.
Yeah.
And then we high fived, and then he told me all about these third party lightsabers and stuff. It made me feel pretty cool. Pretty cool. I'm like, you see, this is why you grow up, because then you can just go out and buy whatever you want.
Yeah, and you're the old professor. You're the old professor at this point now when it comes to Star Wars. That's pretty cool.
So.
Nice. Well, that had to be the high point of your day.
Yeah, it kind of made up for the fact that I got stuck in the parking lot with the wind blowing, putting air into Tim's daughter's tired car.
Yeah, I was up at...
I guarantee you, someone listening to this knows Tim also.
Yeah.
You know Tim. If you think that it's Tim, it's that Tim.
Yeah. Oh, not that Tim. God.
So
you know, I was in Bangor Thursday, I think, and I went down Stillwater Avenue. It was about 10 minutes to 4.
Let me interrupt you real quick.
Yeah.
The whole trip in Bangor, did you get any high fives?
I did not, no.
Okay.
I never get high fives.
I just wanted to establish that. Okay, continue.
Yeah. And I went by Chick-fil-A at 10 minutes to 4, and it was just like it was supper time. I mean, what are you people doing at 10 minutes to 4 waiting in line? I mean, it wasn't like three cars. It was like 20, 30, 40 cars.
The line is always like that, and get this, it actually moves very quickly.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Here's the thing. Chick-fil-A is good. It's good. And it's consistent, and the people aren't outright hostile, which is what I think a lot of people go there for.
Okay.
But it's if I see a line like that, I'm not going.
I've never been. I see the line, even if it's fast moving, it's just like, no, I'll have toast.
Have you tried the that Big Arch burger from McDonald's?
No. No, I didn't.
Okay, so
what is
I
the
tried
big
it right
arch?
After it dropped.
What is it?
It's a new burger. It's basically 2 quarter-pounder patties with, like, some sauce and crispy onions and stuff like that.
Ooh.
It's their big deal burger, right?
Yeah.
So I went and I tried it. All right, so just the burger, nothing else, was $10.36.
Wow.
So that's strike one and two right there.
Okay.
But I'm like, you know, it's new. I want to try it once at least. So I get up to the window, and they said to me, it's that dreaded moment. They go to the window, and then they look to the left, and then they look at you, and they say, "I'm going to need you to park. We're making that fresh." Nothing. Listen, don't tell me you're making it fresh. Nothing there is made fresh. I don't care if you're just cooking it then. It's still not fresh. Nothing at McDonald's is fresh.
Yeah.
It's fine. That's okay, but don't pretend. I wouldn't have ordered it if I'd known I was going to get parked.
Yeah.
I got it, and it was, you know what it was? It was actually a little bit too much hamburger meat. You know, like a half pound is a lot of hamburger meat for, like, good burger, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So a half pound of McDonald's hamburger, that's a lot. It was kind of bland, honestly. The presentation was good. It wasn't all sloppy or anything like that, but it was kind of bland. If it was $7 with the wait, it was about 10 minutes. $7 with the wait, I'd say it's worth it. $10 without the wait, I'd say it's worth trying. But $10 with a wait, I don't think it's worth it.
I think that's endemic, though, of fast, quote-unquote, fast food restaurants that they just take a long time.
Because Burger King apparently has been up in their game, and I heard recently that they changed around a bunch of stuff on the Whopper. Now, Burger King has been pretty bottom-notch for a long time. I'm like, oh, they changed some things. It's better. I'm going to go try it. I've gotten 3 of these Whoppers since then. I make it a point to go to Brewer now. $7, no long wait, And it was really quite, like, I don't know, maybe the only difference is they're not stepping on it before they serve it to you now, because that's what it always looked like. But it's like, it's full and it's good and all the ingredients seem fresh and it's clean, and I don't think someone stepped on it. And so of the two, I'm giving it to Burger King between those two burgers.
There go all
this is great radio. Let's change the subject.
Our fast food customers are long gone at this point. Many advertisers, So the good news is it snowed. We plowed. You plowed, and we didn't have to.
Yeah, it was pretty. I did the sloppy that last snow plow job that everybody knows. You do a poor job just to get it done.
Yeah. And it was gone by the end of the day anyway. So that's the good news.
Yeah, I probably could have left it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the mud now is driving me crazy.
Historically, if we can get past the first week of April, there is no more snow. Every once in a while, we'll get a storm first week of April, but there's very seldom anything after that.
When I got out of school back in 1975, we moved up here the first week of May. It was like May 2nd or something like that, and it snowed. We're unloading the truck, okay, a 24-foot truck, and we're unloading it, and it's freaking snowing out. And I'm like, what did I do? And I love it. It was kind of cool. Obviously, it was cool. It was kind of cold, actually. Yeah, it was windy and cold. But then got done with that, and we went up to Miller. We didn't know where to go to eat or anything. We went up to Bangor. We were in Hamden. And we went to Miller's restaurant, and it was just awesome. And that began the whole deal. And we wound up living in Stockton Springs. Was that 53 years ago when I got out of school? And where I live now, and this is part of the reason we probably bought that house, Pete, is we can see the house we lived in that we couldn't buy because I was from away 53 years ago. Anyway,
I wouldn't sell to someone from away.
Yeah, well, no, people were happy to sell. What the people who had the house, excuse me, we went and looked at it, loved it, and we're like, I don't know how we do this. And the realtor called me and said, would you be interested in 6 months with an option to buy, six month rental with an option to buy? And I said, yeah. And I think that came off, the 6 months came off of the sale price too.
Yeah.
The rent.
The way it goes.
And I was really upset because it had oil heat, and oil was 28 cents a gallon. And man, oh, I cringed every time that oil truck came for 28 cents a gallon. And that really, really got, I mean, I had an engineering background anyway, but that got me started. I can't tell you how much time I spent trying to figure out what to do to heat that house 53 years ago.
Probably wasn't insulated.
I'm going to say it wasn't. I don't remember exactly if it was or wasn't at this point, but it was an experience. I mean, you know, it's you have an old house, you start picking on stuff, and next thing you know, you're into it, you know, with up to your neck, and it was fun. It was not fun when we had to move out because we couldn't buy it. That was depressing.
Yeah,
but you know, we lived through it. And
how much was it in 1975?
$28,000.
$28,000 for a house of comparable size to the one you're in now.
Yeah, I got more land on this property. I got a quarter acre more.
You get that wonderful sloping lot.
And plus, I've got a huge garage. I got a garage big enough to live in.
Bought a garage. Bought a garage with a house attached is what you bought.
That's partially true. So it was fun in the basement this week. Last week, replumbing everything. Because it's in that area. The house had a couple of L's added onto it, and the last L is where the laundry room is, and there's a lot of debris in there that we did not get out early on before we were getting ready to spray foam. So I have to crawl around over that stuff to get to where the drains are. And there's also boulder. This house, this rock and mortar, the rocks for the rock and mortar are literally boulders. And Pete will bear witness to this. They were big.
Yeah.
And all the way in this back section, there's a brick wall that obviously was the back wall of the house at basement at one point. And there's more boulders back there. I'm like, where the hell did all these boulders come from? And
they were probably finding them as they were digging out, because you're on a slope. So
you would think they'd roll them out while things were open. But I don't know.
No, they just roll them into the wall.
Yeah, yeah. And I got to crawl over them. It was a lot of fun. But got everything set up. Took a while to I can't tell you how many trips I made to the hardware store, because I needed one more elbow or I need a Street 45. I can't do it. Anyway, I think that was the last of the real plumbing. The kitchen, the drain's already coming up through the floor. I don't have to replumb that. So
yeah,
that's good.
What do you think? How long do you think before the kitchen is in place and functioning? Realistically, today's March 28th.
I told your mother 2 weeks. The cabinets are in stock,
probably, so May 1st.
Yeah, let's say May 1st just to cover my tuchus here. May 1st sounds good. I mean, the flooring actually is coming on Monday.
Here's a question I'm going to throw out there to the public. If you want to text in with your thoughts. Should we put the floor down completely over the floor, then put the cabinets on top of it, or put the cabinets in and then do flooring up to the cabinets? Because there's a debate as to the expansion for the flooring and possibly getting little bubbles in it. It's that click together laminate, and they say you should have that expansion joint. If you mount the cabinets on top of it, it might not be able to expand as it should.
So the house.
So what's the opinion?
The house I'm selling has a laminate floor all the way underneath the cabinets. And there's an expansion joint around the perimeter. The cabinets are sitting on top. They are not screwed down. They're sitting on top. They're screwed to the wall. But the floor technically can float. There's also an island in that kitchen that's, 3 foot by 4 foot, something like that. And that is not screwed to the floor. And there's never been any buckling or move, no indication of a problem. So I think the more critical thing is the expansion joint around the perimeter of the room to ensure that that does not present a problem. But I'll open up the text messages here and see. I got nothing. So.
All right.
That takes care of that one, huh? Hey, we got a car out for sale this week. Another car, finally.
We got a car out. Unbelievable.
Ah, yeah.
So we're up to five, although one's now pending.
Yeah.
The RAV4 is pending. Someone's coming for that next week. But I've got I've got a 2017 Prius C. Mind you, keep in mind the gas prices as I'm rambling through these. 2017 Prius C with 141K on it. I got a 2014, just regular Prius with 97K on it. 2020 all-wheel drive Prius with, spitballing here, but I think it's like 67, less than 70K. And then we just put out one of my personal favorite model cars, the Toyota Corolla. 2015, I think it's 139,000 on it, $9,300, something like that, plus tax. I love a nice Corolla.
Doesn't like good Corolla. The only thing, I do like the Yaris. I know you like the Yaris.
I'm kind of eyeballing a Yaris for myself, yeah.
Yeah. And
if I could find one.
Yeah. Yeah. It's they're nice cars. They're small, they're light, they're not heavy, Do I dare say they're not built to last? I think they're built.
I wouldn't go that far. Here's the thing, the motor in them is just ridiculously reliable. That little 1.8 liter Toyota motor.
Yeah.
And they just run and run and run and run and run. And the thing is, the motor will outlast the rest of the car. The motor will outlast the metal, I'll say that.
Well, that's and
that's a good way to look at it. With almost every Toyota is like that too.
Yeah, but
somebody once said to me, they said Chevys don't rust like Toyotas do. I said Chevys don't last long enough to rust.
That's true. And that's the thing.
Not all of them, but
when you're dealing with cars that are made for energy efficiency, and let's read that a different way, it's going to be a lighter car. So you have to be careful with what we have on the roads. You have to maintain the undercoating. A, you need to have it undercoated, and B, you have to maintain it and annually inspect it.
Well, the other thing to keep in mind also is all manufacturers, but specifically when they get into their subcompact cars, use heavily recycled steel. Up to 25% of that, this is why newer cars rust faster than older cars do. because everybody's like, I don't remember cars doing this, is because now it's recycled steel and you're getting galvanic corrosion, because no matter how much they try, there's going to be contaminant in that recycled steel. And there's a certain amount that they consider acceptable that they can still label it as steel to use for frames. And that's why if you ever see a car that just has a random, like, rust spot, like, halfway up the door, that's exactly what that is that some other little bit of metal in there that's just eating away at things. That's why we got to stop recycling.
Okay. I've been getting a lot of messages this morning about Oak Island for some reason. I just mentioned it in passing. And I told Pete and Maria this the other day, said they're going to run this out to, and for those of you who are tuning in really late, they're going to run it out to the end of the season. They're going to find something. But it's going to be the end of the season, and you're going to have to come back. Now, it's going to be more than a nail or a stake or even a part of a coin or a button. They're going to find a piece of gold, and everybody's going to freak out and say, okay, see you next November. And that's what's going
to
happen.
I'm starting to think Curse of Oak Island is some sort of deep state psychological control experiment.
Yeah. Got a message here. Didn't you have a Lexus 460 for sale recently? Would you say that, generally, it's one of the finest sedans ever produced? Yes. Pete, you agree?
Yeah, actually, yes. And I don't usually say that, but...
It's an incredible car. If you drive not like a lunatic, it's reasonable on gas mileage. It's not a Prius.
It's an 8-cylinder. You got to drive it like a lunatic.
I know. Oh, my God. It's like butter. It is, you know, you think about Land O'Lakes. You're getting in a stick of Land O'Lakes and you're going down the road. You're driving pure butter, man. It is an
Somebody
awesome
asked me, they're like, how's the mileage on it? I'm like, terrible, but it's awesome.
Yes. Yeah, we don't care.
That was all-wheel drive, too.
It was. That was a nice car. Yeah. And it was a guy
actually really
just
was.
Around the corner from us bought it. Another message here. I have a 2026 Corolla, 40,000 miles, well-maintained, has undercoating, one owner. What do you think it's worth? I don't know. It's probably in the 20s.
Wait, I'm sorry. What was the mileage?
40,000.
And what year?
2026. That's a lot of miles for 2026.
2026 with it's probably worth basically retail.
Yeah. So
I mean, 40,000. You're not much under retail at that if it's that new, even with those miles.
Yeah. So you get on jdpower.com, and you can look it up. Yep. That's going to give you the NADA book value. That's the official book value. Not
NADA is that's transactional data. That's what they have actually sold for. Comparable vehicles have actually sold for.
Right.
Kelley Blue Book is a good guide, but it tends to use wholesale data, which is basically uninspected vehicles or trade-ins or things like that. So,
okay.
And then they estimate from that number.
All right,
so,
he just sent me a correction.
NADA is the way to go.
Okay, we got about a minute left, but he just sent a correction. It's a 2016, not a 2026. that's a big typo. It's still worth some money, but 2016,
I'd say well over 10.
Yeah,
well
it'd be over.
You're in the teens.
Yeah, you're in the teens. I would say up low to mid-teens.
I'd keep it.
Look it up.
If I were you.
I would keep it, too. If it's not rusty, it says it has undercoating. Yeah. I would. I'd maintain the undercoating and let her rip. It's going to last you a long time. So
as I get older, especially as I personally drive older cars, and it's sort of like adopting an older pet. You got to put a little bit more attention into it if you want it to live longer.
Yeah.
So I've changed my opinion from just touching up undercoating to I say get it completely blasted off in the car wash and reapplied every year.
Yeah. Yeah. I got to get into mine. I did turn over to 490,000 miles last week. So we're on the downhill slide.
You're actually gonna get rid of it when you hit 500. You promised.
Maybe. Yeah. That's the plan. We got to go.
We're
out of time.
It.
I'm sorry.
We'll raffle it.
Oh, we could do that, couldn't we? Boy, who wouldn't want my car with 500K on it? Pete, thank you. We'll see you later.
All right.
Everybody, have a great week. See you next week.
A pocket full of miracles. And with a pocket full of miracles, one little miracle a day is all I need. T. Rubble's more or less B. You're the me, I guess. When the sun doesn't shine.